SpaceX makes history with Falcon 9 and the Dragon. NASA Administrator Charles Bolden calls it the dawn of a new era. And they won't be called hobbyists or amateurs from now on. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, December 9th, 2010. History was made yesterday, although the general media apparently lost it in covering politics. Space Exploration Technologies, aka SpaceX, had a second successful orbital mission of its Falcon 9 rocket following a launch at 10:43 a.m. Eastern Time from Cape Canaveral. The first successful orbital insertion of its Dragon spacecraft about 9 minutes later, and the first re-entry ever by a commercial spacecraft a little after 2 p.m. The successes will leave proponents of the old NASA model with little to argue besides the reliability and safety of commercial space. But for now, there couldn't be a much more stark contrast between NASA's Space Shuttle Discovery, which sits with problems pushing its final launch back by months again, and SpaceX, the little company that could. And how would you like to be Elon Musk? Degrees in economics and physics, a resume that includes PayPal and Tesla Motors, and now this. Whatever he decides to do next, how would you like to be a mouse in the corner for that next investor's roadshow? That is, if there even needs to be one, given what the SpaceX website politely refers to as, quote, Mr. Musk's substantial resources, unquote. All I can say is, thanks to SpaceX for validating the handoff of low Earth orbit to the private sector, at least so far, and for giving the aerospace industry something positive with which to end 2010. Musk sits on the board of the Planetary Society, a 30-year-old international membership organization whose founders included the late Carl Sagan. The society has been a proponent of turning loose the private sector in space exploration, and current executive director Bill Nye was among the first to publicly congratulate SpaceX on yesterday's achievement. Quote, Falcon 9 nailed it. We congratulate Elon Musk and his team on a successful launch, another step toward commercial applications that may one day help NASA carry supplies and astronauts to low Earth orbit. Bold endeavors like this will advance the chances for success for everyone in the Earth orbit business, unquote. NASA Administrator Charles Bolden, himself a former Marine aviator and NASA astronaut, spoke glowingly of the Falcon 9 and Dragon flight. Quote, while rocket launches from the Cape are considered a common occurrence to some, the historic significance of today's achievement by SpaceX should not be lost. Just the launch is difficult enough, but successful launch, orbit, and intact re-entry have been accomplished only by a few nations to date. The SpaceX mission today is the first time an entrepreneurial enterprise has joined this very elite company of spacefaring entities. We're witnessing the dawn of a new era, whose ultimate result could be routine, safe access to space, with industry, academia, other agencies, and other governments regularly sending payloads and people to low Earth orbit. That's the goal. There remains a lot of work left to do in order to get there, but today was a dramatic step forward, unquote. Yesterday's success by SpaceX is also significant politically. The Obama administration's announcement last year of a new direction for NASA, handing off low Earth orbit to the private sector and even subsidizing it, set off howls of protest from federal lawmakers representing districts enriched through entrenched contractors. SpaceX and its competitors were called commercial hobbyists and amateur rocket companies by some lawmakers. With yesterday's success and SpaceX's growing manifest of commercial launches, that kind of pandering just got a lot tougher. Up next on ANN, the FAA has questions about how flight instructors renew every 2 years. NTSB issues fiery criticism of the FAA and U.S. Forest Service. And the U.S. and Brazil agree on open skies. You're listening to Aero News.
Freedom through control. Cirrus has completely reinvented the personal aircraft and the entire experience of owning a personal aircraft. It's a bold new take on private aviation that we call Cirrus Flying 2.0. You set the schedule. You chart the course. You're in control.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3222.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for December 9th. I'm Paul Plack. NAFI, the National Association of Flight Instructors, says it was told by the FAA at a meeting earlier this week that the process by which the nation's flight instructors renew their certificates every 2 years is under review. The meeting, which was held Monday and Tuesday in Washington, D.C., was titled Updating the Flight Instructor Renewal Process to Enhance Safety of Flight. Industry representatives were invited to meet with members of the FAA's General Aviation and Commercial Division, also called AFS 800, being told that the FAA had been, quote, reviewing indicators that suggest that the process currently in place by which flight instructors renew their certificates may lack sufficient effectiveness in ensuring that CFIs are being provided the best information in the most useful manner, unquote. NAFI Executive Director Jason Blair says the FAA doesn't view the renewal process as broken, but wants professional, knowledgeable flight instructors who can provide effective instruction for their clients. There are hints that this might involve requiring flight instructors who've been able to keep their currency through referring some minimum number of students for check rides might instead be required to go through biennial 16-hour flight instructor refresher clinics. Chatter on some message boards suggests that some instructors expect the FAA to demonstrate a connection between instructor renewals and GA safety before imposing such a new requirement. The U.S. National Transportation Safety Board is out with a finding of probable cause in a Forest Service helicopter crash that killed 9 and seriously injured 3 others in August of 2008. The Forest Service contracted with Carson Helicopters of Grants Pass, Oregon, for a Sikorsky S-61N. It hit trees and terrain after a takeoff from a location about 6,000 feet MSL near Weaverville, California. In its finding, the board determined that a series of improper actions by the contractor and insufficient oversight by the Forest Service and FAA were to blame. Quote, the contractor's actions included the intentional alteration of weight documents and performance charts and the use of unapproved performance calculations. Contributing to the accident was the failure of flight crew members to address issues related to operating the helicopter at its maximum performance capability. Contributing to the fatalities and survivors' injuries were the immediate and intense fire that resulted from fuel spillage from the fuel tanks that were not crash-resistant, the separation from the floor of the cabin seats that were not crash-resistant, and the use of an inappropriate mechanism on the cabin seat restraints, unquote. NTSB Chairman Deborah Herzman saved her harshest tongue-lashing for inadequate oversight of Carson by the Forest Service and the FAA. Quote, public aircraft have been made the orphans of the aviation industry. It's now time for the FAA and other government agencies to step up and take responsibility, unquote. Specific recommendations to the FAA include oversight of Part 135 operators with aircraft that can operate part of the time as public aircraft and part of the time as civil, clarification of oversight responsibilities for public aircraft, accuracy of hover performance charts, pilot performance, fuel tank crashworthiness, and occupant protection. To the Forest Service, the NTSB recommended the development of mission-specific operating standards for firefighter transport operations, a requirement that its contractors adhere to these standards, and the creation of an oversight program that can monitor and ensure contractor compliance. A full report will be available in a few weeks at ntsb.gov. Representatives of the U.S. and Brazil have settled on terms of an open skies agreement, which immediately removes restrictions on pricing and on the routes between each country that can be served by scheduled and charter airlines. The agreement also provides immediately for full code share rights and additional charter flexibility. When the deal takes full effect in October of 2015, Airlines from both countries will be allowed to select routes, destinations, and prices for passenger, cargo, and charter services based solely on consumer demand and market conditions. Still ahead, tarmac strandings may be a thing of the past. GE's new turboprop power plant is getting test hours on a crop duster. And air shows will see a new civilian jet team this year. You're listening to Aero News.
Piperjet.
Hypersport.
Piper Match.
Global Expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, December 9th. I'm Paul Plack. The U.S. Department of Transportation reports that in the month of October, there was not one incident of a tarmac stranding of 3 hours or more by a U.S. airline, and flight cancellations for the period actually went down slightly from a year ago. We now have 6 months' experience with the rule that the airline said wouldn't work and would result in a big jump in canceled flights. For that six-month period in 2009, there were 546 strandings of 3 hours or more. This year, there have been 12. Everyone wants to see a full year before gloating, but Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood is clearly pleased. He also praised the industry in commenting on the stats. Quote, "We appreciate the effort that the airlines are putting into making this new rule work effectively for the benefit of their passengers," unquote. General Electric's new H80 turboprop engine is building test hours on a Thrush 510G crop duster. The plane first flew on November 23rd in Albany, Georgia. The Thrush is a 510-gallon, 10,500-pound gross weight crop duster with an experimental airworthiness certificate from the FAA. The H80 engine will accumulate more than 8,000 cycles and 150 endurance hours during engine durability and performance tests. Engine certification tests continue at the GE Aviation Check Facility, with EASA and FAA certification expected early next year. And finally today, this week has been the annual feeding frenzy for air shows in Las Vegas. The ICAS show, as in International Council of Air Shows, generally starts with a rush to see which shows can get onto the calendars of the U.S. Navy Blue Angels, then the U.S. Air Force Thunderbirds, which rank a close 1-2 in their value in selling tickets. Some shows don't even commit to a date until after ICAS to keep those options open for the jet teams. Landing a premier turn-and-burn outfit is that important. There are civilian jet team options available for shows which don't get either option 1 or 2, and a new one joins the list this year. Heavy Metal is a new 5-ship civilian jet team sponsored by United Bank Card, UBC, and the team introduced its lineup of pilots at ICAS this week. Lieutenant Colonel Jerry Jive Kirby, retired Air Force, Jared Rook Isaacman, and Captain Dale Snort Snodgrass, retired Navy, will be joined by Doug H-Dog Demko, Major Sean Stroker Gustafson, Air Force Reserve, Air Force Major John Slick Baum, and Lieutenant Commander Michael Buick Eberhardt, retired Navy. Buick? Kirby calls the lineup fortunate. Quote, "It's exciting to be working with a group of pilots who have such high levels of professionalism and skills, both as aviators and as performers," unquote. The guys will be flying L-39s and T-33s. But what I want to know is, how do you get Buick for a call sign? Is it because the car has trademark trim that looks like portholes? Or has old Mike been enjoying retirement a little bit too much? That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, I'll talk with ANN's Jim Campbell, who was at Cape Canaveral for the SpaceX launch yesterday. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.